Good afternoon, everyone. Beautiful day. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:34 p.m. on Monday, the 3rd of February, 2025. Present today are Representative Hannon, Representative Bynum, Representative Stapp, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, Representative Jimmy, and the three co-chairs, Co-Chair Schrage, Co-Chair Foster, and myself, Co-Chair Josephson. Also present today are our House Finance Committee staff, Acting Committee Assistant Bree Wiley, in the absence of her boss, I'm told, Paige Reed Gardinier, and Secretary Leah Frazier. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. Thank you in advance for that. In today's meeting, we will hear the Department of Administration present its FY26 budget overview. With us today from the department is Finance Division Director Eric DeMoulin. Is that DeMoulin? Director DeMoulin, please come forward and put yourself on the record. Begin your presentation.
Good afternoon. For the record, Eric DeMoulin, Director, Division of Finance for the Department of Administration, acting as Admin Services Director, so that's why you're hearing from me today. Today, we will be presenting our department overview and budget overview. They're intended to be high level, be able to answer questions as we go through. So with that, we'll get started. So first, the mission organization, Department of Administration, is to really provide support services for the rest of the executive branch. That is our primary goal in order to make all agencies more equipped, better equipped to better serve Alaskans. We look at the DOA when we get into this in a little bit more detail as well, but as you can see from our historical budget comparisons, the majority of our funding sources is that of the other category. And as we get to the RDU overviews, we'll be able to go into that in a little bit more detail. And primarily funded through other, we are a chargeback agency. As I mentioned, our primary goal is to provide services for other state departments. And we do have a lot of some UGF funding as well for legal and advocacy services statewide.
And when you say chargeback, you mean you're billing other agencies?
Correct. Okay. That is correct.
Please continue.
So on slide four, you see just total breakdown of our budget by those various fund categories. The majority of it sitting in other. That includes our interagency receipt authority, and that is what we charge other agencies and other departments for the services that we provide. We also have a large portion of our funding in the other category for the Office of Information Technology. That is funded through the Information Services Fund, which is an internal service fund at the state as well. So as we get to the component overviews here, or the results delivery unit overviews, you can see that the majority of the sections in the Department of Administration are all designed for services for other departments across the state. We have Centralized Administrative Services, Shared Services of Alaska, Information Technology, and Risk Management, and their primary funding source is all going to be interagency or designated general funds. All these agencies, we do have a chargeback that we do charge out for our services to all of the other departments across the state.
And is the term appropriation synonymous with RDU in your mind?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Questions? Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair to the DOA folks. Just out of curiosity, is there a specific item that's kind of driving your budgetary UGF increase since your 21 actuals and your FY26 proposed? That's like a 30% difference in UGF. So is there a specific item or items that are driving that cost through the chair?
Yes, to the chair, Representative Stapp. The increase that we're seeing in UGF is primarily driven by the legal services and the increase in caseloads that we have. We do have a handful of positions that we are requesting for the FY26 governor's budget. This includes a supervising attorney, so I believe that's attorney five that we have in the budget, paralegal support. And we're also had a determination from the basically the Department of Labor and also our classification section, which made the guardian ad litem positions overtime eligible. And historically, that hasn't been the case, and that is a cost driver in our general fund bucket as well for this year.
A quick follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Co-Chair, through the chair to the folks at DOA. You mentioned increase in caseload. Can you give me like a kind of ballpark, like what percentage of increase that's been? Is it like substantial or 5% or 50% or something like that through the chair?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp, I would have to circle back with the director of the Office of Public Advocacy to really get those year-over-year increases.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Mr. DeMolin, on slide 5, there is an asterisk and a footnote at the bottom, and I am wondering where we can see their overview. In particular, I mean, I get why some of them would be excluded because they're sort of independent, but Division of Motor Vehicles. And since they're such a good revenue producer, I'd like to see them included. Where do we find their RDU information?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I could provide information. When we look at the RDU overview, it's strictly just a view of the budget, not necessarily revenues, but we could provide the detail on both of those aspects. And the reason why they weren't included here is that the DMV is a revenue center for the state. They're fully funded through designated general fund receipts. And so there's no significant budget changes year over year, and it's a net zero kind of impact to the budget. So on some of the ones that we placed off to the side, it makes the graph pretty busy when we add all the RDUs. Because they didn't have any substantial changes, we omitted it from this view.
Mr. DeMolin, what are we doing with DMV receipts other than funding the operation of DMV?
Yeah, Co-Chair Josephson, those receipts basically just get transferred to the general fund.
And how much are they? If you recall?
Offhand, I don't have that figure.
Okay.
But I will definitely get back to the committee.
All right. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair. Did you do you demonstrate your other or intergovernmental charges that you charge for the departments? Do you demonstrate those as revenues to your department? Or are those just basically passed into the general fund, and you just basically put them as an expense?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Bynum. So when we look at IA authority across the state, it does show up as revenue for the Department of Administration, and that expense also exists at the department is actually making those payments to the Department of Administration. So IA authority is it's interesting in terms of how it works. So when we look at statewide expenditures, you omit the IA expenditure portion, and we book the revenues in, and the expense is viewed on the departmental side.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think we're ready. Yep.
So on slide 6, we just put some bullet points of recent accomplishments that we wanted to highlight for the committee here today. We had a lot of different bargaining unit contracts that we were able to successfully navigate through last year with the Department of Administration with the Labor Relations Section. We were able to implement a intake portal for occupational injury reports through risk management, which has been a great reporting tool for us in terms of building efficiencies within that section. And we've also been able to negotiate quite a bit in terms of pricing through the Division of Retirement and Benefits for mid-market check with OptumRx and our pharmacy benefits. And then coming soon, we've got the Division of Motor Vehicle is coming hopefully very close to basically having mobile driver's license or an e-driver's license available for Alaskans here shortly.
On the subject of labor relations, mm-hmm. I've never worked in labor relations, but I can envision that there would be a specialist who knows about them based on experience but may not be an attorney. And then I can see that, on the other hand, you might need attorneys to draft contracts and advise about the nature of the law and that sort of thing. The governor wants to move a number of positions from your agency to the Department of Law. Am I right about that?
That is correct.
And what does that leave left behind at Labor Relations?
Yeah, Co-Chair Josephson, thank you for the question. I don't think that has fully been completely fleshed out as of now. So positions have actually already transferred to the Department of Law from Labor Relations. And I know that they're working closely with the Department of Law as well as with Director Sheehan, the head of our Division of Personnel, on what exactly is all transferring over. A lot of that work is still being basically worked on by both sections just for a clean handoff. And so they'll really figure out where those lines are, what responsibility centers makes more sense to retain within the Department of Personnel versus going over to the Department of Law.
Is it your understanding that there will be attorneys actually participating in the negotiations?
Co-Chair Josephson, I think that would be the case. And I know that we've had attorneys obviously advise on contract negotiations in the past, but I think that's a safe assumption.
Representative Stepp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. Can you elaborate on the bullet point 3, implementing improved pricing through mid-market check with OptumRx, Alaska Care Pharmacy Benefit Managers? Can you tell the committee what exactly that is and whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing for DOA, through the chair?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. I would have to bring up basically our chief of benefits, who's not with me here today, to really give you details on that. The division of retirement and benefits isn't in my portfolio, so I couldn't speak to details on that. We'd be happy to answer any questions you have in writing.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Your question has me going back to that personnel and labor relations. Mr. DeMolin, currently, who are the positions prior to the transfer to Department of Law that were at labor relations? How many of them are attorneys or no attorneys? And when we move the positions, are they all filled, positions that are being moved? Or are they going to be new attorneys hired into what had previously been a labor relations specialist, perhaps not an attorney?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Hannon. The makeup that they find to be most efficient, I would have to let Department of Law speak on their behalf. The positions that we did move over from labor relations were not attorney positions.
Can you follow up? Can you tell me what they were?
Offhand, the exact classification and job titles I don't have. I'd have to get back to the committee on the actual job titles, but they are generally within the HR job classifications. The exact ones I don't have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. I don't mean to be rude, but in the future, if you're going to put things on the slide through the chair, maybe you could at least give a bit of a basic overview of what they actually are. Thanks.
Well, we've got 20 slides. That's pretty long.
All right. So on slide number 7, we have the FY26 governor's budget and some increases to the budget and decreases to the budget just in a summary format. Spoke to a couple just in the front category.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, through Co-Chair Josephson. You mentioned in here in the second bullet expanding operations, and I'm hoping you'll elaborate on that. What do you mean by expanding operations?
Director DeMolin.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin. Expanding operations, we're looking at administrative support for the legal and advocacy services section. So we look at total caseloads, case counts, work, and the growing administrative needs for that division is what we're looking at in that bullet point number 2.
Follow up. So you have more cases than you've had in the past, and this is to support that.
So the chair, Representative Galvin, that is accurate. We have seen cases increase within the OPA section. Mm-hmm. I know that they don't employ any case caps. And so it's been an area that we've been trying to fully staff to give the best services possible.
And is this the, this is the only bullet that mentions expanding operations, but I would guess that you would need a lot of these, attorney and other positions also would be supportive of expanding operations. Is that right? So this a lot of the extra positions are also doing are put in place because of similar expansion or needs. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
So in support of that, when you look at the subsequent bullet points, we got one attorney five to provide legal support and leadership within that public guardian section, paralegal support as well. And as we go through, we're looking for just changing one of our PCNs from part-time to a full-time to support payroll services. We're looking at increasing for our accounting service Workiva software. This is software that we use to produce the statewide financial statements each and every year. This allows us to add more functionality, hopefully build some efficiencies. And we're looking for Office of Public Advocacy when we're looking at more work, potential PCNs. We also need to expand the space and footprint a little bit to accommodate those PCNs. And then the last bullet point we have on here is rising software and contractual costs that we see year over year. This is primarily due to just renegotiating contracts with our enterprise IT licenses.
Director, on the right side of this slide, I see a reversing a one-time case backlog contractor support. Mm-hmm. I can't tell which division that's in. Is that in the legal department?
Co-Chair Josephson, that is correct, yes.
So that surprises me because all I know is that OPA and PD are in crisis. Crisis may be strong, but not terribly strong. And we have case delays. It's a subject of lots of attention. So we think that we can get by with about $1.5 million less of legal assistance in those departments.
So when we look at the decreases that come just as a point of process with the budget itself, one-time increments were not increases directly to our base budget. So this is something that we want to point out in terms of our overviews because it's not something that we're taking necessarily a decrement in. It was never part of our base budget, but you do see the transactions. So it gives some clarification there. As a one-time increment, the 1.4 is only good for that year. And so this reversing that is just basically a point of process when we're drafting the budget.
I see. But is it made up for in the base budget? That's the better question, I guess.
Not to the full extent when we're looking at the base budget. So I couldn't speak to, I didn't put together the one-time increase. I wasn't at the department at that time. So I don't know what all made up the $1.4 million. Some of that, I believe, is being made up with the additions we're looking to make in personnel to address within the legal services component.
Okay. Representative Galvin, then Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair, the big question I have here is that around the word backlog. Uh-huh. Does that mean that this is resolved?
I couldn't say that backlog is fully resolved.
Through the chair, follow-up?
Follow-up.
So I guess what I would ask is if we could do some homework on this to find out what it would take to clear the backlog. My concern is I'm hearing from constituents left and right about the time they're spending on the phone, hours and hours, and then getting hung up on and things like that, which I thought, I could be wrong, co-chair, but what I understood is some of this was to fix that. This 1.4 was to reverse some of the sense that the public wasn't able to get through and get to the help that is needed. And so I guess I'd like to know, to the chair's point of what will it take then to make sure that we are at a space where we are sure that we are fixing this. I think it's now been almost 2 years. So I would really be happy to support in whatever way it's possible.
And through the chair, Representative Galvin, in terms of constituents not being able to reach, is this specific to the public guardians?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's part of it. Pardon me. That is one of the places where that's a problem, but it's happening kind of across the board for many of the services right now, whether it's SNAP or WIC, PIC, you name it, and they get on the phone and they have trouble finding a pathway to get to the services. And so I'm just trying to figure out a way to make sure we're covered and that you have what you need to get the job done.
Of course, SNAP is in DOH, but
I know it's a different. Right.
Yeah.
Thanks for that clarification. I appreciate that SNAP maybe wasn't a good example, but just in general, these services that you are providing that are so important to Alaskans and in this area as well. It's in every area that I'm hearing something is, there seems to be a backlog.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Joseph. And Mr. DeMolin, the third bullet under decreases, the reverse labor contract negotiations and arbitration for $146,000, do we see that as an increment in the Department of Law? Is that some of the transfer? Or by moving people over, we're just saving money in this department?
So through the Chair, Representative Hannon, when we're looking at the reversal of some of these are one-time items in the budget and the point of the process, in terms of resources being asked for the Department of Law, I couldn't speak to that, unfortunately.
Follow-up. So could you speak to what this reversal is in the labor contract negotiations and
arbitration? Yeah, so through the Chair, Representative Hannon, so we've had a couple of basically, when we're doing contract negotiations, we've had some multi-year operating type appropriations to really help in terms of, you know, being able to hire external assistance as we need to. And so the Department of Labor Relations, or the Division of Labor Relations, excuse me, has had some basically non-based budget monies to be able to help through that process. So when we're looking at moving this work to the Department of Law, we will be looking at making some budget corrections in our own base budget and some of these one-time items that we would no longer need in terms of the Department of Administration.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Let's go on to slide 8.
Slide 8, these are our just when we look at each one of the components that make up DOA, got a small slide that just gives a quick rundown on some significant budgetary changes that are happening in the upcoming budget fiscal year, as well as some of the services provided by those agencies. So the first one we have is administrative services. Primary goal for administrative services, like every other department, is to provide services within the Department of Administration. We do budget consultation, accounting consultations. We did start doing basically what we call business development, which is a little bit different than what we've done prior. We've been doing a lot of work within the Division of Finance in that regard and trying to build some efficiencies within payroll. We also, and health plan administration services is more in DRB, but we do some coordinations between DRB and administrative services in that regard.
All right. Looks fairly status quo to me. Division of Finance?
Yes. Slide number 9, we got the Division of Finance. We provide statewide accounting services, enterprise systems management and maintenance, and these are for two systems in particular. That's both IRIS and ALDER. IRIS is CGI Advantage. It is our system of record, both for the human resource management as well as our financials. We provide payroll services for the state, and we also do the central management of the corporate travel management contract, which is our corporate travel, as well as our procurement cards through U.S. Bank.
Okay.
Next, on slide 10, we've got the Division of Personnel. They provide statewide just human resource services, and they've been providing labor, union negotiation, arbitration, and conflict resolution. So when we look at union negotiation, the degree of which we will continue those services in partnership with law, as I mentioned, are still being fleshed out, and we should get some more clarity on that as we go through the next budget fiscal year. And so the biggest significant budgetary change is obviously moving those positions right now to the Department of Law. So I don't have the exact positions and the breakdown, but that's what we're looking at in total costs.
So just to put a finer point on it, these would be personnel that would not necessarily be lawyers. They would be labor negotiators housed in the Department of Law.
Yes, Co-Chair Joseph, that is correct.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Could you clarify whether all of labor negotiations to go to law, or are we going to have it in both departments?
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, right now that work is being done as a collaboration right now. We have a couple of employees, specifically one, that has done negotiated contracts for quite some time, and she's still doing it even amidst the transfer. And in terms of how that engagement will work in the future, I think they'll try to flesh out. I mean, ideally, I think Department of Law would do it in its entirety. But I think that with any natural change, there's some overlap. And we're we want to support our other sister agencies as much as we can as well. So,
Mr. Dumoulin, is it your agency, and I should know this, that is monitoring or tracking the salary study report? Is that through DOA?
Yes, Co-Chair Josephson. We did do the initial contracting for that salary study, and our classification manager is still very much involved in that project, yes.
And I you may be tired of this question, and I can I read the Daily News story about it, but when might the legislature get eyes on that report?
So, Co-Chair Josephson, I don't have a date or time frame that I could share with the committee today. I know that we had a presentation on this with Commissioner Rana and Director Sheehan last week, but I don't have any new information to be able to share with the committee at this time.
But am I right that there was a late March was proposed of 2025?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I believe you're correct. Yes.
Okay. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, through the chair. With regard to the report, how much did the state allocate for that? How much money did that cost?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin, the initial appropriation for that was $1 million.
And follow-up, was there an additional appropriation? And if so, what was that?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, there was no supplemental appropriation for the salary study.
And follow-up, if I may? And when was the initial agreed-upon time for this report to be finished?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I believe the original time frame for us to hopefully get an initial report of data was at the end of the last fiscal year. And then, so that would be basically 6:30, I believe, is what we were working with Siegel, the contractor, to try to get us some data to be able to provide for a report.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you. So 6:30... 2024?
Yes, to the chair, Representative Galvin, that's correct.
And
follow up,
if I may. Sure. And if I'm doing my math correctly, it is now, let's say it's 7-1 and we're at 3. So we're 6 months late already for that release, is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I don't know if there was any promises made in terms of releasing the finalized report, but I know that Siegel was under contract to provide us our data to the Department of Administration by 6:30.
Follow-up?
Last follow-up.
Is this a common practice that we should be used to, that you release it 6 months to a year later? After you've seen it?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin, I don't think it sets any sort of precedence in terms because this is something that doesn't happen on a regular basis. I do know that there's a lot of inputs and a lot of variables that you really have to account for to make it statistically relevant, especially for policymakers to make any sound decisions on, you know, what's coming across. The classification section does this work quite a bit. And I know that it is a lengthy process to be able to go through and articulate, and they're doing it statewide. I believe that there are around 400 positions. I don't want to misquote that they were looking at in terms of a comprehensive salary study across the state. And I know that just the amount of time and effort that it takes to do basically a class study or salary study just on one single job class in the state isn't a quick process. So I can't imagine what they're going through, and I would have to defer to Brittany, who's the expert in that field, to really speak to kind of time frames and the work that goes into those.
Representative Shruggy.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair on this same topic. So we're pretty far past the June deadline. They're still at work. I mean, are we expecting – is this additional work that we've requested? Can you articulate for us – what additional work they are doing that is taking so long for them to get us this information beyond the original deadline? And is there going to be an additional cost to that? I have to assume if it takes double the time to produce the report, it's double the cost. So is there going to be another appropriation request coming our way for this study?
Yes, Co-Chair Shragi, I don't believe there's going to be any additional costs. So when we looked at the original appropriation, there were some, I don't want to say amendments or to the contract. The initial contract is being refined in scope. Any of the monies that has been going towards it is still within that $1 million, and I don't anticipate any price overruns associated with that.
And Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What did you say the name of the company doing the study was?
Yes, Co-Chair Foster is Siegel.
Siegel, okay, thank you.
Follow up.
And will they be providing any kind of a report to the legislature, just I guess in their own words, as to why there's such a significant delay?
Co-Chair Foster, I'm not sure if we'll get a narrative from Siegel.
Okay, thank you.
Co-Chair Shruggie.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. Can you tell us what was changed that has required them to take this additional time in producing the study?
Yeah, through the chair, Co-Chair Shruggie. I couldn't speak to what additional changes were made. I'm not involved in that contract directly, but I could figure out and try to get back to you.
Okay, let's move on to slide 11.
Yep. Slide 11, we have the Division of Retirement and Benefits. So not a whole lot to really be discussing on retirement and benefits. They've got salary adjustments being their primary significant budget change for this year.
Director, you saw that yesterday I was in my office down the hall, and I answered the phone from a constituent. I've gotten just a couple calls from, I think, teachers, both of them, who are DC recipients, defined contributions, so they're Tier 3 in that system. And they noted that – they reminded me that under defined benefit – I mean, this is one of a thousand variables – they wouldn't need to make this call because the retirement plan would generate what it generates. But these are folks that really are tracking their own retirement planning. And you know the problem. Their districts, their school districts, are unable, I guess, to forward your office writ large the revenue that is a retirement share such that it can be seen on the computer and digested. I think I had this roughly correct. Can you tell us where we are in fixing this? I know there was a breach, a security breach, and so you're doing what are called workarounds or encouraging the districts to do workarounds. But these are folks that I think feel they're entitled to interest from any delay in the reporting of their retirement accurately. Can you give us a full-throated explanation of what's happening and what's being remedied?
Yeah, through the chair, Co-Chair Josephson, there's quite a bit that's been going on with just the Division of Retirement and Benefits in regard to those breaches that occurred. I can say that we're looking at hopefully having a resolution and communication out this week. They've been working a lot with basically their tax professionals as well as with the Empower folks who are the basically the administrators of our retirement plans to really get a plan in place for consideration. So the last update that we got from the Director of Retirement and Benefits is that we should have hopefully a plan of resolution sometime this week. What I can say is that I know that logistically, just when we're looking at the amount of volume, it's something that I believe they're going to have to do in stages, but they are planning this out, and I think it's really close to being communicated out.
Did you have a question, Representative Stapp?
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Along the same lines of questioning through the chair to our Division of Administration folks. So last time, you know, this summer, obviously there's like a hack and then there was delayed in retirement payments up to 14 weeks for especially in TERS. Do you know what the current time frame is on a retiree from getting their benefit paid out to them from the state from when they retire, through the chair?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. We get updates from the Division of Retirement and Benefits. There was intent language, I believe, last year to get that under 6 weeks. And what we've gotten from the division is that they've been compliant with that. So it's currently under 6 weeks.
A fault, Mr.
Follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Justin, through the chair. So I noticed that there's no requests for any additional personnel or anything like that in your budget. Can you tell us with high confidence that you guys will ensure that going into FY25 you will be able to make those payments within that projected time frame of less than 6 weeks or 6 weeks or less, through the chair?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Staff. I believe with our current staffing levels, it's an attainable goal to keep us within that threshold. I know that Director Lee was doing a presentation. She's done an excellent job in getting those vacancy rates down. And I know that she's also made just some organizational shifts to put resources where they were needed most in order to basically hit those time frames as necessary.
Just quick follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow-up.
Yeah, thank Co-Chair Justin through the chair. I appreciate attainable goals. It's not exactly the question I asked. I wanted to make sure that you guys will continue to meet that standard with high confidence. I know you can't give me a guarantee that you will, but are you confident to a high level that you will ensure that retirement payments to public employees who retire from the state are going to be paid within an appropriate time frame through the chair?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp, you're correct. I can't guarantee anything, but I do have a high confidence that we can meet that goal.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Schrage, then Bynum.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. Just a quick follow-up on your line of questioning. I didn't hear. I'm glad to hear there's a plan and that there'll be communications going out soon on this retirement issue, but on the question of interest to those who have had delayed contributions, are you able to provide a statement on that? Has there been a decision made?
Yeah, through the chair, Co-Chair Schrage. In terms of interest payable, I couldn't speak to that. Unfortunately, that's a little bit above me in terms of those policy decisions. I know that just as a point of process, like, we want to make sure that we're taking care of all of our employees across the state, but I can't tell you with any certainty what's been decided.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Jefferson. And through the chair, you had indicated that there's going to be a communication going out, and specifically communication in what form and to whom?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum. I know that they're going to be looking to communicate just a communication and resolution. Commissioner Verana was speaking to us about this today. In terms of the exact audience, I couldn't speak to, but I'm assuming that it's as wide as possible. I know that a lot of people are affected, and there's a lot of people that are reaching out on this particular subject. But I know that's basically within our commissioner's office and the governor's, you know, communication team, so I couldn't speak to that directly either.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll move to slide 12.
All right. Slide 12, we have Shared Services of Alaska. Shared Services is a central agency that basically provides processing services to all the departments statewide. So included in there is our accounts payable, travel. We do a lot in terms of debt recovery, procurement, and then also our centralized print and mail services.
Straightforward. Office of Information Technology. Oh, sorry. Question from Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. So through the chair, does each department have its own accounting system?
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, no. We all use the IRIS accounting system. There's some other state corporations that may have their own proprietary accounting software, but in terms of the executive branch within the state and our departments, we all use the same one.
Thank you.
All right. Slide 13.
Slide 13, we have the Office of Information Technology. Excuse me. Primary services provided by OIT is information security, service management, communications, connectivity, and then enterprise applications, and as well as centralized data center support.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Josephson. So is OIT responsible for statewide IT?
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, it would be basically the enterprise. Statewide is what really falls into their category. Each department across the state has their own proprietary systems in a lot of cases, and they do have very bespoke kind of IT needs. So when we look at IT, we provide the larger enterprise-level services, but there's also IT spend across the state in specific departments.
Thank you.
That helps.
Slide 14.
Slide 14 is the section risk management. So the centralized is basically just managing our self-risk within the state. So we do claims processing, litigation management, contract review, insurance administration, and consulting. And when we're looking at major changes for this year, so set forth your state insurance catastrophe reserve account for -$967,000. So when we're looking at the catastrophe reserves, we actually increase the total catastrophe reserve account, the actual fund, and that's funded through year-end general fund sweeps.
Yes, I was just looking at that in the language section. And so this means there will be a reduction. We put it up to $50 million, is that right?
Yeah, through the chair, Co-Chair Josephson, that is correct.
And so now we're backing out about $1 million of that $50 million?
So through the chair, Representative Josephson, no, we're not backing out the million. This is going to be the four-year state insurance like reserve account. It's separate than the catastrophe fund itself. So we basically built within the fund to care for that particular appropriation. And now we would just have the catastrophe reserve account. Or fund, excuse me. I misspoke.
So the $50 million is the catastrophe reserve account, correct?
That is the fund, the catastrophe fund, yes.
Okay. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair, why? Why are we taking $1 million out of it instead of just leaving it there?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I believe, like, when we're, again, we're looking at a four-year station's four-year state insurance catastrophe account. Those are some of those one-time budgetary items, and we've already addressed it in a larger scale, being able to increase the total balance of the cap fund by $50 million, or $250 million, excuse me, cumulatively.
Follow?
And I presume this is almost rhetorical, but Chair Joseph, Mr. DeMolin, so this almost million will just go back to the general fund. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, yes.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go on to slide 15.
Slide 15, we have our legal and advocacy services. So services that are provided are public guardians, elder fraud, the guardian ad litem positions, and these take care of the children in need of aid, so commonly referred to as the China cases. Court-appointed special advocates, and the public defender agency as a whole. So we've already touched a few times just on their significant budgetary changes in order to support just legal services component. So we're looking at trying to expand just some leadership as well as administrative support. One of the items, as I mentioned, is the guardian ad litem positions are becoming overtime eligible, and that's not something that we've historically budgeted for. We're currently monitoring the additional costs associated with having them overtime eligible. And then we're looking at just, like I said, making more office space to accommodate some more staff.
Okay. I'm still a little confused about how this meshes with slide 7 on backing, reversing one-time contractor support. OPA in particular has always had contractor support. So it has its regular state employee attorneys, and then they essentially farm out to a list of attorneys where there's further conflicts or caseload that needs to be covered so that someone in private practice could effectively be doing the same work, I think, as an OPA attorney in some circumstances. That's my understanding of how it works. But I see need reflected on slide 15, and it all looks perfectly good to me. It's $1 million, and most of it is personnel. And then I see a lack of need reflected on slide 7, and I just can't quite understand the yin and yang of that.
Yeah, through the chair, Co-Chair Josephson, I would agree. When we look at the one-time increments, they are just a technical budget item that we put in there. I do believe Director Stinson would say that he would welcome having more funding.
Okay. All right. Questions on slide 15? I don't see any. We'll go to DMV.
All right. Slide 16, we have the Division of Motor Vehicles. Major services provided are providing licensing, registration, and titling services, commercial driver's license, training resources, crash data repository, real IDs, and screening for fraudulent activity. Significant budget changes that we have is just trying to add one more analyst programmer to the DMV. Right now, we got just a report that what they're working on in terms of IT within their systems, I think they had over 100 different IT projects, basically, in terms of system updates or upgrades or basically just security patching. And so their workload has just increased, so we're looking at adding one more IT position within that organization.
Okay. Question from Co-Chair Shragi and then Galvin.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair. So increased need, but this is being added as a one-time increment. So are we expecting that? I didn't hear anything about the temporary nature of that increased workload on IT capabilities.
Yeah, through the chair, Co-Chair Shragi. When we're looking at IT support, it really depends on the projects and the breakdowns. A lot of times IT projects will be, oh, basically the time frame is just getting it to implementation or to fruition, and then the support is a lesser burden. So it really depends on the projects and the scope. So when we're looking at adding an analyst programmer, we mentioned the sheer amount of projects. It doesn't necessarily mean that those projects continue in perpetuity.
Follow up?
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, I'd be curious, is it relatively reasonable to ask for a list of those projects and their expected completion dates? And then separately, I'd like to know a little bit more about this move towards digital IDs. What is driving that change? Why is that a priority right now? It seems, if there's not a federal mandate or something, it seems like just increased workload at a time when we don't have a lot of extra capacity.
Yeah, through the chair, Co-Chair Shragi. In terms of the issuing of basically a mobile electronic driver's license, I know that it's something that has been of interest just from our commissioner's office and I believe the governor's office as well. It's something that I think is going to be valuable to Alaskans in terms of, you know, just basically getting some buy-in there and just having that as being a broad base of just efficiency, basically, something that would be good to have. In terms of the workload shift of that particular project, I'm not sure how large of a lift that has been and how much it is related to this particular ask. I know that we are working with a contractor to help get that through as well. So,
last follow-up for me.
Follow-up, Representative Shorty.
Yeah, sounds like a nice to have. I'd love to be able to have my ID on my phone, given that the DGF rolls over to the general fund. I don't know that... That's something that we really want to pursue. And anyways, it's just an interesting prioritization.
Sure. Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mobile ID, I was assuming that was the unit that went out to rural Alaska to help folks get their IDs, especially with the real ID and so forth. But it sounds like that's not what that is. So my question remains, I guess, is can you give me any updates as to any efforts that are happening there?
Yeah, through the chair, Co-Chair Foster. I don't have any updates to that specific program. I would have to defer to the DMV.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if maybe they could get back to you with a written response on that.
Yes, please do that, and I'll make sure to forward it along the committee.
Okay. Thank you.
So I think I was neglectful. I had Representative Galvin, possibly, and then Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And I did have a question about the real ID, which I know we've pushed back that deadline several times, and currently it sits at May 7th, 2025. And that was my question really was around, is some of this extra need because we're trying to make sure that we're meeting the entire state of Alaska's needs to get to an ID so that everyone can travel domestically even. They need to have this for. So that I think this is a very pertinent question, and I've had some constituents ask about it. And so just want to make sure that we're up to speed in terms of whatever is needed to deliver this to all Alaskans. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Mr. DeMolin, this is probably a question you'll have to get back to us, but will the new digital electronic driver's license satisfy, if they are a real ID, I have a real ID driver's license, if I get it digital, will the feds recognize that as a real ID, or do they have any objections to an electronic version of real IDs?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Hannon. My understanding is that there are some validation tools that need to be in place, let's say at airports, in order for the TSA to recognize it. It is my understanding that they do recognize it as a valid form of identification. And so when we're looking at the implementation of, and I don't want to say what the technology is that they have to install, but it was my understanding that they were going to start with the Anchorage Airport, and I believe as well as Juneau. Once it started being rolled out. So that's what I have in terms of just my anecdotal information on the subject.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go look at the vacancy issue.
Thank you. So slide 17 is just department vacancy counts. I know that vacancy has been a hot topic, so just wanted to make sure that we put some different talking points there. So when we look at total vacancy counts, what's very interesting about Department of Administration is that We get a lot of transfers in and transfers out depending on what services that we're providing or what may go back to departments. So you see that in our cumulative total budgeted PCNs year over year. Most recently, we had recruitment services that I know went back to divisions to some extent, as well as IT help desk. So you see some positions growing and shrinking based off of those, you know, statewide initiatives. And I think it's important to look at those as a changing denominator in terms of total vacancy rates. So if we've got, you know, a reduction of almost 100 PCNs, that denominator changes our department-wide vacancy. So I just want to kind of show that in a different light, so not necessarily by percentage, but based off of those gaps that you see to our budget PCNs.
Director, where is payroll housed in the agency?
So the department, or excuse me, the division of payroll is within the division of finance. So when we look at slide number 18, so vacancy percentage by RDU, we look at basically the division of finance.
Okay.
Need to break these out. So division of finance is within basically the central admin services component. When we look at the percentages by RDU. So if we break that down further to components, so if you don't mind, I'll skip to slide number 19 so it's a little bit more clear. You can see the division of finance there in the fourth. So right now, as an entire division, we're sitting at a 32% vacancy. Payroll is one of the sections within the division of finance, doesn't encompass the entire thing. And when we look at cumulative payroll vacancies, I believe as of last week, we were sitting at about 46% vacancy in payroll currently.
All right. And let me ask you on that. That's a good segue. Is payroll still using outside contractors to get its work done?
Through the chair, Co-Chair Joseph said no.
Are there still... can you tell us the status of NOPPs? I'm told they're called Notice of Pay Problem is an NOPP.
Yeah, through the chair, Co-Chair Josephson. We digitized that whole process over this last year, which has built quite a bit of different efficiencies when we're looking at how NOPPs were processed prior. NOPPs used to be a paper form that was basically sent to the office and printed out. In the event of having as large vacancies as we have just over the last 2 years, it became basically a ticketing system where that was the only method to really try to get, you know, any issues or inquiries to payroll for resolution. When I looked at the numbers earlier today, we have just over 3,000 total tickets in our system that need to be addressed. Now, not all of those are formal notice of pay problems. In the system that we built, they are just called payment inquiries or actual notice of pay problems. And notice of pay problems, I believe, were at 708.
Okay. Representative Staff, then Galvin.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. Justin, through the chair. So do you have any ballpark on whether or not your premium pay, overtime pay for folks across your RDU components is going up or going down from FY 24 to 25?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp, overtime that we've had over this last year, just within payroll itself, has been, I believe, up relative to FY 24.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes, follow-up.
Can you elaborate through the chair, just as a whole, not just payroll, but all of your RDU components? Because the thing that I notice is your FY24 vacancy rate is higher than your right now FY25 vacancy rate. So what you might infer that less vacancies typically means less overtime. So is that true holistically that your overtime hours are up across the board or specifically just in payroll through the chair?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp, I would say that was within payroll. When I look at total overtime costs just across our department as a whole, I don't believe we've seen a drastic increase one way or the other.
Okay. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Through the chair, I want to make sure I've heard you correctly. Did you say that within the Department of Finance that the payroll vacancy rate is 46%?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, that is correct.
Okay, so that sends huge alarm bells to me, and it makes me wonder about, I'm going to take us back to this. I think that the reason we had a study put out on many positions to understand the wage study, it makes me really think about this problem and whether or not we were trying to get information in order to better understand whether or not we're competitive with industry. And now that I hear that we may be over a year beyond when you've asked for a study, it makes me wonder if that study is even going to be relevant. And we spent $1 million on that to understand it. Or we could have just upped the wages for far less than $1 million and maybe not had 46% vacancy. I'm trying to understand all of this in a way that just says, are we taking the time to solve this problem? Are we giving it the attention that it needs? Is there something that the legislature can do to help you solve this problem?
Director.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin. I think that, you know, when we look at a salary study and right-sizing pay for work being done, it is a component of the overall review. I wouldn't say the only one, right? Mm-hmm. So when we look at one particular case, I do believe that we could fix a lot of vacancies with paying people more. Believe that wholeheartedly. I think we could get a lot of people, but then we're also running the risk of paying outside of bands for what positions are, you know, should be reasonably paid for. I am the director that oversees the Division of Finance. I wouldn't be opposed to going to have vacancy rate be zero, but I am cognizant about, you know, those facts that we all need to be aware of. We're also looking at, you know, efficiencies. We look at the amount of budgeted PCNs within payroll, and there's over 60. When we look at, you know, the different items and initiatives that we're doing in the Division of Finance, I've got 27 individual projects just to build efficiencies across the board that will hopefully reduce the need of physical headcount. We've done that with the portal, changing the way that we're getting, you know, pay problems sent through our door. We've been able to automate a lot of the approval processes across what we would consider low-risk timesheets. We're looking at, we've built a couple of different programs internally, actually, to help query and index a lot of our paper items. One of the biggest hurdles that we've had is just having this be a very paper process for many years. So when we look at the amount of payment inquiries or NOPPs, one of the things that we have to do is be able to pull those historical documents to really be able to address it. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of pieces of paper. So if I have a, you know, an account or basically an HR technician trying to address a single NOPP or issue, they've got to go dig through boxes, find this corresponding paperwork to be able to work, and it could take hours. And so a lot of the efficiencies that we're building, like digitizing and indexing these documents, it'll be queryable by an employee ID number, and it'll show everything.
Follow up, if I may, 46% is equal to how many people? How many PCNs, roughly?
So 46 is going to be just around 30 PCNs vacant today.
And follow up, is your goal then, through your efficiencies, to not need 30 PCNs?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin, I don't think that's the goal, right? I think the goal is that we are able to staff for the PCNs that we have, and we're building efficiencies because, frankly, we have to along the way. We've had vacancy issues for the last couple of years, so we're trying to, for lack of better terms, make do with what we do have, and so that's where it's coming through. Now, will that translate to potential less need for PCNs doing that particular work? I would say yes. But that doesn't mean that we don't have other areas that we could actually deploy those resources to help.
Follow up.
Yes.
Is there any other department that is experiencing vacancies like you're seeing in payroll?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, offhand, I am not sure if any other business unit is being saddled with a 40-plus percent vacancy today.
And just to be clear, do you do payroll for public health nurses?
Through the chair, Co-Chair Joseph said, yes, we do payroll for Department of Health.
Okay. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. And through the chair, just wanted to be clear on the numbers that we're looking at here. I mean, these are just a general overview. But my understanding from looking at the budget information that we have available to us, that the numbers that you're posting, say, for example, in 2025,
reflect the additional FTE or personnel that were added from 24. So if you're showing a vacancy number in 25, it includes the new positions that you added and may not have been filled in 25. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Biden, that is correct.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to slide 20. And it says thank you.
And thank you.
Any remaining questions from my esteemed colleague?
Yeah.
Yes. Co-Chair Shiraki.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair. Just back to this payroll issue. In college, I worked as an accounting clerk for a local construction company, and I learned a lot in that job, but the number one thing that I was told from day one is don't screw up payroll. You better pay the employees on time, and you better pay them right, because if you don't, they're going to another company, they're going somewhere else. They lose all faith and confidence in your business as an entity. And I'm concerned that I read the news of the last year, and frankly, this is an issue that's been occurring for longer than that, and we've got payroll issues all over the place. And it sends alarm bells across my radar when I hear about a 46% vacancy rate. And yeah, we're working on some systems, although, you know, how much do those actually resolve the problem? Can we expect these system improvements and these new spreadsheets that you guys have implemented to rectify the payroll issues this next year? I mean, is this an issue that is we're on the cusp of solving, or is this just a partial Band-Aid to reduce the rate of error or delay in issuing paychecks?
Yeah, through the chair, Co-Chair Shoggy. There are concerns I have as well. You know, my main goal and objective is to build that confidence back. I don't think it's lost on me at all that we've lost some confidence, you know, across different business units across the state. And to your point, payroll is, you know, we talk about anybody's money or their insurance or anything of the like, it's going to be the most sensitive item, you know, to them, basically. So when we're looking at improvements that we're making, it's really hard for me to tell you that, you know, I'm on the 10-yard line, you know, about to solve this problem, because it's been pretty substantial. As you mentioned, it's been going on for well over a year. I joined the Department of Administration back in February, and what I can say is that we've made pretty large strides in trying to really identify and build some efficiencies to rectify the problem. I'm working currently right now on an entire analysis across all of our collective bargaining unit agreements, the different pay rules that we have to abide by, the complications there, and how do we streamline those processes in order to build the efficiencies and bring back a high degree of certainty and a degree of accuracy to get that trust back. I've been meeting directly with unions on different projects and initiatives that I'm trying to push forward and trying to really address these issues. And I am confident that the systems and the progress that we've made so far is allowing us to see some light at the end of the tunnel. Really hard for me to give you a direct time frame. With the applications that we're rolling out this week, I will hopefully be able to get some data collection points to really give a legitimate answer of how long it's going to take us to basically get ourselves out of the backlog that we found ourselves in, and hopefully a business plan and a strategic plan surrounding payroll to ensure that we never get to this point again. That's my goal. You know, working at the Division of Finance, and one that I hope to deliver on sooner rather than later.
Follow up. Glad to hear that that's your goal, and I take your commitment seriously. Let me ask this question maybe a slightly different way. If we implement all these efficiencies, systems, et cetera, applications, mm-hmm. will that allow us to solve the issue, or do we have to solve this vacancy rate issue in order to truly have payroll functioning at the level that it needs to be functioning?
Through the chair, Co-Chair Shragi, it's a fair question and one that just I am not equipped today to answer, but I think it's going to be a combination of both, right? I think as you obviously build some efficiencies and you're able to gain those, you know, then maybe we could do more with less. I cannot tell you with a degree of certainty right now what less looks like. And like I mentioned, you know, even if we're getting people out of the work that they're doing today, right, which is basically paper and manual timesheets, there is a need to be able to provide better services in other areas. So maybe that goes into quality assurance or whatever the case is, right? So right now I've got a lot of my resources just day-to-day validating inputs. I think I can find much better activities for them to do. So not necessarily, like I said, is it a reduction in PCN, the goal? It's making us more efficient, more accurate, and providing that service better for Alaskans that work for us.
Last follow-up. Yeah, I think I'm hearing we're making large strides. You can't guarantee that we'd solve this problem with just the efficiencies and applications. We should be addressing the vacancy rate as well. You know, I just go back to, you know, this common mantra that we should run government like a business. Mm-hmm. And if this was the small business I was working at, they would drain their personal bank accounts to make sure the payroll went out on time and accurately. They would do anything and everything to solve that issue. And I'm just concerned that we are not treating this quite as serious as an issue as it is. And back to Representative Galvin's point, if the vacancy rate is an issue and we need to be filling these positions, you said it yourself, higher pay does help to address vacancies, and we don't have the information to be able to determine what is the appropriate pay to pay these folks in payroll. I mean, this is a huge issue. If people aren't sure that they're going to get their paycheck on time, they're not coming to work. And that just fuels the vacancy rate issues that we have all across your RDUs and every other branch of government here that we have, or department and function that we have in the state. So it concerns the hell out of me, frankly. And this is just one problem in our state amongst many. And I don't know what we're going to do to solve it, but it concerns me.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Shragi. I would agree, but I do want to point out that, you know, even with a 40-plus percent vacancy, the team within the payroll is actually paid on time, 99.8% of payroll underneath our purview in terms of our responsibility center, which ranges anywhere from 15 to 17,000 state employees every 2 weeks. On time for the last, since I've been keeping track of the data, is from pay period 8 of last year. So when we look at the amount of, you know, state employees being paid on time, it is 99.8% of our employees. I think that gets lost because, like I said, if we're not hitting perfect, payroll is going to be the most sensitive thing to folks. So that's not lost on me, but I think it is important to note that, you know, the staff that work there work very hard. And it's actually quite impressive what they're able to do, being as short-staffed as they were, without having tools, in my opinion, that we're trying to really stand up for them right now to be more efficient past what they already are. So,
thank you.
Representative Hannon?
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Mr. DeMolin, clearly there's an area where we're looking for some additional information. So as you're doing that, when I met with payroll employees last year, one of the things they spoke to was it's not just their vacancy rate, but the longevity in the position, that this is, although it may seem like it's a straightforward job in an accounting tech line, that it's much more complicated. So I am looking for some longitudinal data of how many of the employees have been there greater than a year, greater than 5 years, up to 10 years. Because what I heard from those payroll employees last year was that was the problem, is that they didn't have people with much longitudinal knowledge of the quirks that make it go haywire. And even if we were hiring new people, that it takes about a year for them to be up and functional. And so I'm looking to just see if we've improved on that. Are we keeping the people we're getting in those positions long enough to get them up on step? So as you get us some more answers about payroll. That's one of the data points I'm looking for information on.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Hannon, I've actually got a full payroll presentation I'd be more than happy to do for the committee. I'm doing one for the LTC bargaining unit agreement tomorrow, just as a one-off, but I know that I'll be presenting on payroll, specifically in state affairs on Thursday, and I welcome the opportunity to speak to that in more depth for the entire group.
Director, we appreciate that. We'll take note of it. However, and I know I hate to give you the homework, but hopefully your assistant has kept a log of our inquiries, and we would love to learn more about the department. We look forward to those responses. You've done a great job, Director. We do have another question. Representative Stapp.
I will be really quick. Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair to the director. So I know that people have kind of hammered on this. I would say I think payroll is great as long as you're not that 0.2% of people who have had not gotten their paychecks, you know. So what I hear from you is all the steps that have been taken basically are mitigating the problem. The problem is moving in a more positive direction. I'm going to infer that also because you really aren't asking us for any funding or any type of ask in the budget right now. So my question to you through the chair is what should we do if this problem gets worse and not better after having you at the table and you not asking for anything? Like, what's our recourse through the chair?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp, I'm not entirely sure how to answer that question. We do have an ask specific to payroll that I think is going to help us in our future state and our strategic plan, and that's on the capital side of the budget. We'll be looking for basically a more robust time and attendance system to address a lot of the nuances that make this job very difficult for the staff that work it each and every day. So when we look at bargaining units across the board, and just kind of echo Representative Hannon, one of the biggest issues that we have is we have so many rules expected to be basically adhered to by each one of the bargaining unit contracts against what basically are majority entry-level positions within payroll. It's a pretty big lift, and it does take a while to build the efficiencies necessary when we're looking at the longevity needed to become fully proficient in processing all these different bargaining unit contracts. What I would venture to say is that we need to be able to provide them with the tools in order to do that more effectively, and that's what the capital ask is for.
And as a quick follow-up, Mr.
Yes, follow-up. Rep.
Yeah,
Step.
Through the chair to the director. Thanks for that, and just again, for the record, you're confident that in the event that, hey, we go ahead with this capital appropriation, that we don't foresee the level of potential issues in payroll going forward. Is that correct, through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, could you repeat the question, please, to make sure I hear it correctly?
Oh, I just want to make sure that with that capital appropriation ask, say we fund that and it's implemented, then you expect the situation to get dramatically better and not have any more issues within payroll that are foreseeable, bar some crazy external circumstance, through the chair.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp, I think that's a fair statement. When we're looking at the funding requested, it's our best estimate with the RFIs that we put out earlier this year. I don't know if that's going to fully address all the needs that we're going to have for the state, but I think that it's going to put us in a much better position than we are now.
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you. Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair, we've heard a lot about payroll processing and the missing payments due to the new and revised administration process in other departments. What are the processes and what is the primary department and how will the common and serve are the, how would you serve these problems?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, could you please repeat your question?
Yes. Due to the processing and missing due payments in the administrative process in other departments, what are the processes? Do they come from your department, and how would common and serve are these problems?
So through the chair, Representative Jimmy, you said missing due payments. Are we referring to union dues?
I'm not sure.
Okay. So when we're looking at different dues, so a lot of them are kind of opt-in versus opt-out, I believe. So I honestly can't speak to it. I would need a little bit more details.
Okay. Rep. Jimmy, you could take it, as we say, offline if you'd like to get some clarification.
Yes.
You bet. I'm sure that the director would be happy to.
Yes.
That's what he's here for. Any other questions? We thank you for your time. We're going to adjourn, and I'm going to make a brief announcement. Nothing too exciting, but tomorrow we will meet, as usual, at 1:30, February 4th. At that meeting, we will hear from the Office of Management and Budget as they present the FY25 supplemental budget. With that, we will adjourn this meeting at 2:47.